On the couch with psychotherapist Frank Rubino. He's on the Lucy Ann Lantz Show each week here on Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY. And today's topic is what, Frank?
The many benefits of providing food for your loved ones.
My mother did that to a T. Yes. I like that this topic validates the traditional women's role in the household, because so often those women from yesteryear, they're not given credit where credit is due. And I think that was a huge mistake in our society here.
Oh, sure, for lots of reasons. And when you look at all the benefits that come from being a cook and providing food for your loved ones, they're multifaceted. So there are the obvious physical ones of satiating hunger, but there are psychological, psychosocial, all types of benefits that come with identity benefits, all kinds of things that come from being able to provide food for people.
Why is this topic on your mind right now?
Well, it occurred to me over the weekend that there's lots of people going to be cooking and barbecuing and picnicking for their families in celebration of the nation's birth. And I thought there's a lot of benefits that come along with that role of being the one who provides food. And we sort of gloss over that, I think, in lots of ways that I think maybe we should maybe pause and pay a little closer attention to.
One of the big problems is that in America, we don't take time to savor our food.
Well, that's true. We oftentimes, even the term fast food, it's all about the speed. We have to hurry up and get this food. We're not even going to park our car. We're going to eat and drive. Lots of things that we do, I think, that are not only physically unhealthy, but I think really rob us of an opportunity to really not only enjoy a meal, but enjoy the hands that made and prepared the meal for us.
All right. The benefits of feeding others today on the Lucy Ann Lantz Show with psychotherapist Frank Rubino. What are some of the concrete benefits of doing this?
Sure. Well, one of them is that when we eat food, particularly good food, our brain releases oxytocin, which is a hormone that's contributes to balancing our other hormones. It's a hormone that helps us for lack of better words, it makes us feel calm. So it's one of the things that we can do as a family, as just whomever, to sit and enjoy a meal together. And if you have underlying anxiety, a good meal can reduce some of that anxiety. It's also a wonderful outlet for creativity for the preparer of the food. Many people who have a wonderfully creative in the kitchen can come up with beautiful dishes that really not only satiate hunger, but are also nutritious and are flavorful for the family. And also for the people who come in to enjoy the meal, the smells, the sights, the sounds, and the good food itself can create traditions and memories that are long lasting. There's a number of really wonderful things.
And not everyone's good at making food, at creating dinners. They might have a good heart to do it like I do, but I certainly can't do it the way my mother and grandmothers used to do it. I do think, though, that social media has helped in that endeavor, and just the food channel on TV and being able to watch other people make things has helped me grow in my culinary skills, although I wouldn't say they're skills, but at least it gives me an idea of where to start. And I think that's been beneficial.
Oh, it certainly has been. And I think you're selling yourself short. I've had your cooking and your skills are deep.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I do. I wouldn't say it if I didn't believe it. But there are lots and lots of ways that we learn. It used to be maybe you watched the people in your household cook, and then, the books came along. And you're right. You can go on social media and find wonderful recipes for foods that maybe you never even thought of, using either common spices and ingredients, or you have to go looking for them, which can be an adventure all of its own.
What about having your own garden to add to the mix?
Well, that's another part of this, too, that I think is so wonderful, is that we can really begin to plan these things by starting with even growing our own food. So now, even in the winter, we plant our garden. In the spring, we begin to plant. And then throughout the summer, we're actually able to harvest the food that we've planted and grown, and then be able to provide that to our loved ones, which really, I think, adds a whole other level to this providing and cooking for our loved ones.
I want to go back to how I started with you, and that is this time period in American history where women were not celebrated for their role in the home. They still aren't today, for that matter, but it doesn't seem to be as material because women have other outlets. They have work. They have careers for the most part. There are a majority of women who do that. So I wish there was a way that we could have conveyed to people how important that was. And I don't want to lose that now either. And I also don't want to see where the generations underneath us aren't learning from the skills that we do have, that we pass down the history, the heritage of our families to the next generation. And oftentimes they're not into it until it's too late and the person is gone.
Well, that happens very often, that by the time people become interested in cooking, and this is something I think that culturally, even people who do want to get married and start families are doing it much, much later in life. And so if people are waiting to start their families, and that it just stands to reason that maybe some of the people who have all the gatekeepers of this knowledge are going to be gone by the time people become interested. And I think that may have been a problem for many years, not just this one. But if you think about it too, Lucianne, it's not even just the women who get to cook. The guys get to do it too. Oftentimes men are in charge of the barbecue. I'm not sure why. Maybe because there's open flames involved, and so it just kind of seems to be something that men get to be drawn to. Or now there's a very popular trend of doing a lot of smoking of the food, which is just another layer of wonderful ability to provide food, especially because it takes hours and hours and hours, and sometimes, you know, better part of a day to provide this. So I think it's something that can be shared by both the man and the woman in the household.
So if you're on the receiving end of delicious food that a loved one has prepared for you, what's the best way to show your appreciation rather than eating and unbuttoning the top button of your pants and going to sit and watch a ball game or whatever you're interested in?
Well, I think the compliments are always a good way of doing it. And asking for seconds, of course, too, is another way.
Yeah.
One of the terms in my household was always the mentioning, hey, is this a do-over? So this is this was so good, we're going to want to do this one again.
This is
a do-over meal. Right. But I think even small compliments like that, I grew up with that in my household, watching my dad. Was always it's funny. A friend of mine was commenting. He had come to my house for meals growing up, and he was always laughing. My dad would always tell my mom, "Oh, you outdid yourself this time." He's like, "Gosh, your mom outdid herself every time she made a meal." But I think there are ways of those heartfelt compliments are really good ways to start, and maybe offering to do some of the cleaning afterwards.
Yeah. You know, another issue with today's way we eat that I find very problematic. I hosted a dinner party last week for some old friends and their family in a variety of ages. And I checked to see if there were any food allergies. We tend to have to do that today. Didn't do that growing up. No one cared. You ate what was in front of you and you loved it. Completely different world today. Do you know this young family said to me, "No, we have no food." And she proceeded to send me a picture of her 7-year-old eating squid. And I said, "Well, you've really introduced your young son to some worldly foods there. That's remarkable." I find so often that because parents don't like something, they project that on their children. And I'm just so saddened because then the kids don't have a chance to explore their own tastes and wants and likes.
Well, that's a really good point, Lucianne, because there are a lot of psychological objections that people have to certain kinds of foods. And I understand that. And I want to be sensitive to that. My godfather grew up on a farm in Italy back during the Second World War, and his sister had psychological objections to a lot of different foods. And they were, you know, raised at the same time, in the same place, under the same harsh conditions. And yet she had some of these psychological objections to food. And bless her heart, she would cook anything for her family, but it was a struggle for her to do that. But what she didn't do is to pass that along to her kids, who, by the way, grew up to have no psychological or very few objections to the foods.
What are psychological objections to food, because there are health concerns, like people are gluten-free, people are allergic to nuts, and so on and so forth. Is this something different?
Oh yeah, this is different. So the natural objections are people may have some allergies, and that's something nobody can help. A psychological, and maybe they can't help a psychological one either. But say for example, somebody will say, you know, I don't eat seafood. Okay, maybe they don't like the idea of it. They don't want to eat a certain type of food because they don't like the idea of it.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, a certain part of the animal. They'll eat a hamburger all day long. As long as you don't tell me what's in it, I'm loving it. But if they know another part of the cut of meat, then maybe they have an objection to it. So it's not about flavor or even texture as much as it is about the idea of what it is.
Yeah, good point. All right. So food is so important. We all need food, and we have to have it to live, obviously. But let's start saluting those who provide it for us and who take that time, which is an extraordinary amount of time, to create these wonderful dishes. And let's celebrate them a little bit more, Frank.
Oh, for sure. And maybe this week, instead of going out to eat the way maybe you plan, or you're not planning a meal, maybe just plan one. And you can go to social media if you want to and look up dishes with whatever your favorite base is, whether it's, you know, pork or beef or whatever you want, and see what comes up, or even vegetables, doesn't matter. and create something that maybe your family or your loved ones might enjoy, and try something new. That's the run the experiment. Try something new. It doesn't matter. You can always order a pizza.
This is a good reminder to adults, because we often tell that to kids, but we don't show them how we also are doing that.
Well, and that's the other thing too, Lucianne, to show children that you're excited about cooking really gets them excited about it as well. And always allow the kids to be a part of the process, whether it's peeling a potato or stirring something or being a part of it, so that they too can take some kind of ownership in the final product. There's nothing like giving a child a taste of success in an area like that. So it really fuels their ability to not only be creative, but open their minds to the possibilities of food.
All right, Frank Rubino, psychotherapist, on the air each week here, and he practices out of Plymouth, Michigan. What's the bottom line here, Frank?
The bottom line is that food isn't just a way of satiating that hunger, that there's a whole door that can be opened up to a wonderful world of culinary experiences, and we should really be mindful of that and kick that door wide open and run through it.
And revel in the experience.
Indeed.
Thank you, Frank. I'm getting hungry just talking about it. Frank Rubino, psychotherapist, on the air each week. You can Google Frank Rubino and Psychology Today. You'll find a landing page on that website and get more information about Frank, his bio, and contact information. And he's on the air each week right here on Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY.